Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Francisco L. Borges and the Melville Charitable Trust.
Farewell and adieu to you, Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. We've just received orders to sail for New England, and we hope for to see you in a short time again. We'll rant and we'll roar like two Yankee women. We'll rant and we'll roar on deck and below, until we sight ahead of old Martha's Vineyard, and straight up the channel to Bedford we'll go. Well, I've been a sea cook, and I've been a whaleman. I can dance, I can sing, I can walk a jibboom. I can handle a harpoon and cut a fine figure. Whenever I'm up in a ship, stand in a room. We'll rant and we'll roar like two Yankee whalemen. We'll rant and we'll roar on deck and below, until we sight ahead of all of Martha's Vineyard, and straight up the channel to Bedford we'll go. Farewell and adieu to you, Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. We've just received orders to sail for New England, and we hope for to see you in a short time again.
All right. Well, first of all, we need a huge crowd applauding here, but it's basically just me sitting in the studio listening to the jovial crew. There's actually 20 more verses to that song. They get to Martha's Vineyard, their Airbnb, the combination doesn't work, they don't know how to get in. It's very tragic. The Jovial Crew is a group of musicians and historians. They've been performing shanties, forbitters, and other traditional old songs in Essex since the founding in 1986. They're sort of famously at the Griswold Inn on Monday nights. There's four of them here. Cliff Haslam, the founder of the group, Joseph Morneau, Rick Spencer, Michael Hodkowski, and we'll talk a little bit about them and to two of them here as we go. So I have to set the stage here. I have to set the scene. I love sea shanties. I will say this. When I was in third grade, I was already a nerd, and I had Kingston Trio records. And the Kingston Trio back in the 60s, they would just sing any traditional song, whether they had any connection to it. They would sing Hawaiian songs in Hawaiian. Just three white guys. But they did a lot of sea shanties. And so I was this little third grade kid, you know, walking around and go, you know, blow ye winds, ye morning, blow ye winds, hi-ho. I didn't have a lot of friends. So I love sea shanties. I don't know how to spell them. We want to talk a little bit about this amazing form today on the show. That's what the show is about. You'll be hearing the great Jovial Crew off and on as we go along here. But Joseph Morneau, maybe get us started here. What determines? There are sea songs that are not sea shanties, mm-hmm. but there are sea shanties. And although, as I understand it, General Taylor might be a sea shanty, even though it's about Zachary Taylor, who's not known for his naval adventures. So what makes a sea shanty a sea shanty?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the jobs that are being utilized on board ship and then the rhythm to get everybody worked together. The song will be chosen for that purpose. So a sea shanty will actually have a call. It's a call and response form of song where you have a primary man, a shanty man, who will call out the original line, and then everybody else will respond and pull the lines or push on a bar at very specific words for that particular rhythm, which you'll hear in a couple of songs that we're going to do. But the problem, of course, is that with time and application, people have begun to think of everything that even mentions the water in your bathtub as a sea shanty. So that's just... Yeah.
Well, yes, and we'll come to that. But Rick, you have some experience also as a reenactor doing this stuff. So, I mean, in a way, you can kind of put some of the ideas that Joseph just talked about to the test, whether they kind of work in that kind of a maybe 18th century maritime environment.
Sure, Colin. Certainly the essence of the matter is that sea shanties technically were songs that were tools to help coordinate tasks on board ships. So we want to make sure that we're maximizing our efficiency of work. And you can do that in any number of ways. For example, you can pull on a rope with an old 1-2-3, 1-2-3, but that gets boring after a very short period of time. Sailors in the English-speaking world began to take a hint from natives of other cultures that they encountered in their travels. And by the 1830s or so, in the English-speaking trades, in many of the English-speaking trades, we saw sailors utilizing songs to help coordinate efforts. So if we think of sea shanties technically as tools to get jobs done, I mean, that's the essence of it.
And, you know, Joseph, because there's an oral and kind of passed along tradition, they're sort of fundamentally unstable, much like the crowd at the Griswold Inn on Monday nights, I think.
But, That's true.
But, you know, for example, the song that you guys did, well, some people probably hear a little bit of Robert Shaw in Jaws, where he's doing farewell and adieu to the fair Spanish ladies. I've also heard the rant and roar thing. I think Great Big Sea, for example, does that just as a thing,
yep,
you know, without any Spanish ladies. And I mean, to that point, there's a long time between the advent of sea shanties and sheet music. These are completely different things. So there'll be different versions passed, I guess, from sailor to sailor even.
Right. You know, the songs that are being coined and printed, sold on broadsheet ballads and so forth, those were one aspect of the songs. But when it came to shanties, they were free-flowing. And the person who'd be the shantyman would make up his own lyrics as he went along. So what you see other collectors writing down and cleaning up for publication, not every shantyman, not every ship would have that song sung that way. So there's already a longstanding tradition of making it up as you go along.
Right. And so let's talk a little bit, maybe Ricky can do this, about forbiters. So this has something to do with the forecastle, which is usually called the forecastle or something like that.
Forecastle,
all right. See, I was an impressed seaman for about 3 years. I didn't learn all the terms. But yeah, just tell us a little bit about the idea of a forbiter.
There were shanties, Colin, and then there were songs that were not shanties. And we as a culture like to label stuff. And so what do we call the songs that were not sea shanties and were not used at work? These are leisure time song forms. On many ships, there was a sturdy post near the bow of a ship to tie lines to, and they were called the four bits for reasons I'm not clear about, but it was not uncommon for guy with an instrument during leisure time, it might have been a concertina, it might have been a fiddle, it might have been a banjo, to sit on the four bit, one of the four bits, with people gathered around him, and they would sing leisure time songs. Those songs in some cultures came to be known as forecastle or forecastle songs. In other cultures, they came to be known as forbitters.
All right. So last question, and then you guys are going to do another song. And this, so we will do so all through the show. We'll sort of alternate talking and singing. You know, it seems like a weird question. And maybe it's because half of my career has been as a writer, Joseph. But there are like at least three ways to spell this word. A shanty, like, you know, like you'd spell shack or something like that. And then there's C-H-A-N-T-Y, and I think C-H-A-N-T-E-Y. And I guess maybe this is part of the oral tradition, too. It makes sense to me that it's a C-H thing, because it kind of fits with the French chansons and stuff like that. But what's your preferred spelling?
We go with C-H. Most American shantymen and groups will do the C-H for spelling. Most Canadian and British groups will do the S-H. There's nobody bothered to stop and write down a record when they were first doing it. So the best historians come up with is it came from the French word chante. And then later on, when some of the Englishmen were actually writing down, collecting some of the songs, God forbid what they perceived as their national music would have a French origin, despite all the other French words in the language. So they started to spell it with S-H. And when you look at a lot of our source materials, Those people will use the SH mostly for the same reasons. But at this point, it's sort of it's an interactive thing with people like us always telling people that we're singing shanties, not in a shack. So.
You know, there's a movie called Fisherman's Friends. Is that what it's called? It's about and it takes place in Cornwall, I think, on the Cornish coast somewhere. And it's actually based on a true story, I think, about some singers like you guys who actually get approached by a record company. But there's a scene in the movie where somebody's asking a waitress in the pub what kind of music this is. She goes, "It's the rock and roll of 1752, you know? I think that's sort of not a bad way to talk about it. So let's hear a little of that rock and roll from 1752.
Rock and roll.
We're going to do, you're going to do Around Cape Horn.
Well, I hope you don't mind. This is actually from 1819. Is that all right?
And we're not sticklers for that kind of stuff. It's public radio. We make it up as we go along.
Yeah, there's no copyright issues on this one.
Around Cape Horn the young men go, and when those young men are away, then those young girls dress up neat, and they go a-cruising down the street. A-rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day. When out to sea their sweethearts go, it's then they must have another beau. To wait 2 years, they say they can't, but to wait 2 years, they say they shan't. Rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day. Skein laces long with frills so neat, and bonnets worked so complete, with their painted cheeks and curled hair, to think to make the new men stare. Rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day. Far from the fields of the young men gone, far from home and all forlorn, I wish to God they've never been born, as to go a-cruising round Cape Horn. Rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day. When those young men do come home, this is a story that they hear. Welcome home, you need not fear, no one has courted me, my dear. Bullsh, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day. Bright false smiles they like for to wear, bright false bows and long false hair, white satin shoes with a silver bow, to take us young men all in tow. We are suckers,
rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day.
Now to conclude and end my song, there's women tells me I am wrong, but if by chance they find I'm right, may they sing this from morn till night.
Rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day, rightful day, follow little day, rightful right, oh, follow little day.
Around Cape Horn by the Jovial Crew. This is great. I wish I could, maybe we'll just add applause later or something. With us are Cliff Haslam, Joseph Morneau, Rick Spencer, and Michael Hutkowski. And so Rick, you know, that's a very, very cheerful, lively song. And I think maybe one could make the mistake of going from there to, well, they must have been very happy people. Whereas I'm guessing, from what we know anyway, this is a very, very hard life under very uncomfortable conditions. Maybe you need a happy song.
Life at sea was really, really difficult. Food was notoriously bad. The treatment could be harsh and even brutal. The men were subject to the whims of the sea. At any given moment, a rogue wave could strike the vessel amidships and go down with all hands. And so the challenges, the many, many challenges of seafaring were magnitude. And it was not a great life. Yes, it was important to have songs that reflected some sort of positivity, but there were also plenty of ballads from the disaster traditions.
And I mean, Joseph, another part about this is that these are bunch of guys who are cooped up somewhere, except when they're, you know, when they're on shore, which isn't very often. And so they're, I'm trying to think of the word, they're horny. So there, some of these songs are a little bit, you know, a little bit on the body side, a little salty, right?
Yeah. Rudyard Kipling wrote, "Single men in barracks don't grow into plaster saints," one of my favorite quotes for this. Rick and I were talking about this the other day. A lot of the collectors in the 19th century were very afraid of too much sex in the lyrics that they were going to be publishing of these real sailor songs and such. So they would remove that but leave other things that are no longer considered to be acceptable in today's social climate. If you go and dig back into those journals and letters from the sailors at the time, you'll find that they are pretty raunchy, and sometimes there's a lot of double entendres and thinly veiled, and other times they just come right out and tell you. And we have a tendency, because of our audiences, we're an adult band for an adult audience, typically in a bar, we will lean a little bit more into those traditions. In other places, we might tame it down and use what we consider to be more appropriate words. And certainly the sailors themselves, when they were, for lack of another word at the moment, composing these songs or composing their lyrics, they weren't considering that this was going to be sung for an audience, certainly not for mom, dad, and the kids. This is for them, like men in a locker room or like the old-time military when it was men only, and they could say whatever they wanted and very often what was on their mind.
Right. Yeah, no, the getting together with the extended family would be, you know, "Hey, could you sing us one of your sailor songs, Uncle Jack?" maybe not. And with that in mind, we are going to hear a song called "The Ebenezer." And we should say, maybe this is the time, Joseph, to talk about the fact that these songs are kind of task specific. I think Rick was kind of getting at this earlier. So this would have been a song maybe sung on a particular kind of vessel or while people were doing a certain kind of work.
"I shipped on board of the Ebenezer. Every day it was scrub and greaser. Holy stoner and scraper down. If we growl, they'd blow us down.
Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, or handy, oh. Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy."
The old man was a drunken geezer. He could not sail the Ebenezer. Learned his trade on a Chinese junk. Spent most time down in his bunk.
"Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy, oh. Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy."
The Ebenezer was so old, she knew Columbus as a boy. It was pump her belays night and day to help her get across Liverpool Bay.
"Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy, oh. Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy."
We sailed away before a breezer, bound away for Valparaiso. Round Cape Horn she lost her sticks, the Molly Hawks picked up the bits.
"Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy, oh. Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy."
Wet hash it was our only grub, sir. Breakfast, dinner, and for supper, bread was as hard as any brass. Meat was as salty as Lot's wife's.
"Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy, oh. Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy. Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy, oh. Get along, boys, get along, do. Handy me, boys, handy."
It's the Jovial Crew. We're going to take a break, and the crew is going to come right back with some more shanties.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford Healthcare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford Healthcare. ECMO is a leading-edge, life-saving treatment for patients with cardiac or respiratory failure. Dr. Jason Gluck, director of the Mechanical Circulatory Support Program and Emergency Cardiac Care at Hartford Hospital, explains what it is.
So ECMO stands for extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, outside the body oxygenation of blood. It's a life support technique that's used by highly sophisticated medical systems for patients with severe heart or lung failure. The technique involves removing blood from the body, oxygening it, and then returning it back.
ECMO procedures happen in the ICU, but not all hospitals are equipped with the necessary technology and staff. Dr. Gluck describes Hartford Hospital's ECMO Go team.
So ECMO is considered when treatments have failed, and in our center, with a special ECMO on the Go team, we'll actually take that technology to their hospital and help them out there if they need to stabilize the patient and then bring them back to Hartford for recovery.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
Well, Bonnie was a warrior, way-hey-ya, a regular bull terrier,
Jean-Francois.
Well, Bonnie was a Corsican,
way-hey-ya,
a rotten, snotting Corsican,
Jean-Francois.
Well, Bonnie went to school in France,
way-hey-ya,
it's there he learned to fight and dance,
Jean-Francois.
And Bonnie went to Moscow,
way-hey-ya,
he lost his army in the snow,
Jean-Francois.
He set Moscow ablazing,
way-ya,
and then he turned around again,
Jean-Francois.
Yes, Bonnie fought the Russians,
way-ya,
the Austrians and Prussians,
Jean-Francois.
Then Bonnie went to Waterloo,
way-ya,
old Nosey beat him through and through,
Jean-Francois.
He beat the Prussians fairly,
way-ya,
he beat the British narrowly,
Jean-Francois.
He met the Duke of Wellington,
way-ya,
and then his fighting days were done,
Jean-Francois.
Then Bonnie went in exile,
way-ya,
he died on St. Helena's Isle,
Jean-Francois.
Now Bonnie is no danger,
way-ya,
for Bonnie's now an angel,
Jean-Francois.
Yes, Bonnie was a warrior,
way-ya,
a regular bull terrier, Jean-Francois.
All right, Bonnie was a warrior. That's the Jovial Crew. That was Mike Hutkowski taking the lead on that one. We should say that this is, they're in the studio with me. First time we've done this since the pandemic. And I should probably say it's Joseph Bourneau, Rick Spencer, Mike Hutkowski, and the group's founder, Cliff Haslam. And let's talk about the sort of elephant in the room. So around 2021, we're in the middle of the pandemic, Joseph, and suddenly on TikTok... You know, just what you'd expect. People doing sea shanties. And there was one that they did a lot that I know you guys don't even think is really a sea shanty. But it wasn't just one. There was a bunch of them. And I guess there's kind of a duet function on TikTok where you can add your vocal and keep layering vocals up and sounding a little bit more and more like you guys. And I don't know. I mean, what did you think was going on there? Do you have any theories about why it was sea shanties?
And yeah, it was boredom. one of the great things about sea shanties and similar music is that call and response for performance sake, the public can pick up the chorus on the spot. They don't have to study in advance. They don't necessarily need sheet music in front of them. So it's a great way to participate as opposed to going to a show. And unless you've been a long-term fan of that particular band, you know, you can walk in, pick it up, have a great evening, go home and say, that was fantastic, versus... they were a great band. It was nice to listen to them. The gentleman, the Scotsman who did that Wellerman TikTok shanty, did a phenomenal job with it. But it's not a shanty. It's just a sea song. So on the one hand, we really like it. On the other hand, we don't like that it's now fed into the whole thing, that everything that mentions the water is suddenly a shanty. And much like people in Irish music kind of shudder when you ask them to sing Danny Boy, so too most of us feel about the Wellerman.
Right. And Rick, or Cliff, for that matter, you might want to talk about this. I mean, I think Joseph is kind of alluding to this, but people were alone. People were fragmented. And there's something very communitarian about sea shanties. You guys do this stuff at the Grizz on Monday nights, and people show up. Somebody wrote an anthropology paper about you guys and about this night and how it's a form of ritual. It's almost like a sacrament. But I mean, when you're alone, this is something, there's something together about sea shanties. You guys merge with your audience in a way that, you know, that maybe Beyonce or Taylor Swift can't even do.
Yeah.
Although you closely resemble both of them.
Yeah, we're a sort of entertainment band on Monday nights. We can do concerts, we can do whatever, festivals. But Monday night is a night we sort of entertain people, and it's see it all the time. These people, we get new people in every week, you know, because they're just passing through. Some people have heard about us and they come down. But other people are, well, we don't know the songs, you know, so we'll sing them a nice easy song with a nice easy chorus, and then, you know, slowly they get into it. And we're fortunate to have a regular group of people that come down every week, so they are all belting out these songs. So people look around, what's going on here? They've never seen anything like this before in a bar where they can go and have a good time, drink, and sing a few tunes. And say, sometimes we do get a little bawdy and we give them a little laugh. So,
and if I may add to that, throughout the pandemic, there were online shanty sings. So using Zoom, we can't all sing together without that delay effect. But there were people from all over the world connecting through their computers and people taking turns singing their favorite songs. So that community spirit continued on. And in fact, I think was strengthened by the experience, so that once everything lifted and we could go back to what we're doing, we're finding the crowds are bigger. There are more participants. There are more people that are getting involved as opposed to just being fans.
The songs are also, Colin, very accessible. Every maritime culture has its seafaring music traditions, and the songs move from one to another. If you sing this particular song in English and there's someone from France in the room, they will say, oh, you've anglicized our song, and vice versa. So there's a lot of interplay, cultural interplay, in this very, very accessible and enjoyable song form.
Yeah, and Rick, but although to the point that you've been making today on the show, too, I think there's a way in which when you think back at the original function of these songs, a ship, you know, a merchant vessel or, you know, any kind of ship in the 18th or 19th century, everybody has to do their job and they have to kind of do it in unison. You can't make up your own rules and you can't make up your own time and you can't make up your own rhythm. So there's a way, because disaster can ensue, or at least a failure to get the work done properly. So there's a way in which this kind of music invites a togetherness, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead. Say a little bit about that.
Yeah, and it really doesn't matter to today's audience whether this song was used as a tool to help coordinate work or not. This is just an enjoyable music form that allows for and invites participation. People love, the people who love to participate love to participate, and that's sort of why the sea shanty as a form has enjoyed such a revival in the last 5-10 years or so.
Yeah, and one thing that I think many people might wonder, and Joseph or Cliff or whoever can answer this, but now there are recordings of sea shanties, but you have to go looking for them, and I guess things like Tidal or Spotify help. But how do you guys find songs? Because this is largely an oral/folk tradition. So when you want to find a new song or you want to learn a new song, how does that happen?
Well, we start collecting a lot of the songbooks that were assembled by people who actually took the time to go around collecting the songs while they're using it. The Stan Hugel was the last of the actual deep sea shantymen. That was actually his job on board a vessel, and he collected songs from other sailors that were much older than him. There are other people that were collecting songs back into the 1830s, 40s. The shanties, the forms as we know them now, are more properly from around the 1820s, 1830s, more or less, kind of fudging that. So when people talk about today's shanties that we sing and label them as 18th century, that's not accurate. I collect a lot of songsters, as they called them, from the 18th century, and there are a lot of sailor songs in them, but none of them are of the style, the shanties that we sing today. You can certainly dig around and find these books in hardcover, softcover, PDF, whatever the case is. But there are recordings going back into the 60s and 70s that you can get your hands on of some phenomenal performers in our genre. And today now, we're lousy with sea recordings. So
yeah, and you know, I mean, obviously, Rick, Mystic itself, there are festivals and places like that, and I don't know if you knew him, but Don Cinetti, the late Don Cinetti, was a great friend of mine for a long time, and he was the kind of guy who, you know, you probably learned a few new songs from Don, plus some other stuff. And I want to talk a little bit, too, about this very special thing that happens on Monday nights at the Grizz. And Cliff, there's a story in this anthropology paper that was written about you guys, about a guy who's kind of depressed and upset, and you guys take requests. And I guess this guy just said any song that involves yelling. But just talk a little bit about how you read the audience's mood or sort of tailor what you're doing on a given night to what's going on out there in the crowd.
And that's what we do. We each week, we have to look at the audience. And we don't have any sets written out. So we'll try different types of songs and see what they like, and then, you know, once they start smiling and joining, then we know what's where we're at with the audience, and each night is different. So it's a challenge every week.
If you go to festivals, is there now? I mean, it seems like obviously Sea Shanties started out as a profoundly and unanimously male activity. Are there like women's sea shanty groups? I mean, in the country music, mm-hmm. they have the Highway Women now. So yeah, tell me about what's going on with the women.
I mean, the famous one is the Johnson Girls right now, but there was Liverpool Judies. There's a few other groups, Silver Darlings over in the UK now. There are more women's groups coming along, and there are Shipboard. There was certainly at an age where racism was far more endemic and just thrown about, much like people just throw on any old joke today, I suppose. You see sailors on board a ship of all racial backgrounds working together, and because they had to survive with each other, they had to rely on each other, they threw a lot of that to the wind, if you'll forgive the pun, and tried to work together. So the music, we see it as something that's really for all people. And the fact that it has for such a long time really been more the purveyance of old white guys has become problematic as we move forward, trying to get more women, more people from the black community, more people from the Hispanic community, more people getting involved in this music because it's theirs as well. But we're trying, and there are some groups here and there that are coming together for this.
I know on all the pirates on Our Flag Means Death, they're very, you know, very conscious of being politically appropriate, and just, you know, I'm trying to take everybody's attitudes and sensitivities into account. But Joseph, to that point, this is probably worth making here, there is, you know, a fairly direct line between this music and the work songs of slaves, or the work songs of poor farmers, the work songs of prisoners, right? Anybody who doesn't have that much control about where they are at a given minute and what they have to do, they're probably going to come up with this kind of music.
Right. It was a Timothy O'Connor in 1776 was on a privateer vessel that went out from Marblehead, Massachusetts, and his vessel was captured almost immediately. And they're brought over to England, imprisoned there. And out of sheer boredom, he went around to all the other prisoners and collected songs that they were singing. And there were a lot of the songs that have made their way into the shanty realm, work songs later on. But they were, like many of these songs, complaining about the people in charge, complaining about the people who have the power, complaining about the food, the general social order, and so forth.
Yeah, there's just the factor of monotony. You have a hard job that's often monotonous. Singing is something that's going to make that seem like a little bit lighter kind of work. Mm-hmm. So I assume there's no contemporary use of these songs. I don't know. There could be really container ship shanties, right?
Let's move the container over there now. Move it over here.
Not from a practical standpoint, but there are people who are writing songs to that effect, including the old old fan vessels that went from England over to France, hovercraft. Yeah. There's a hovercraft shanty, but you wouldn't really use it as a work song. It just
right.
So
there are people who still write a lot. I mean, for a lot of this folk music, in general, that people write, it's called in the tradition.
Yeah.
So there are some people who write songs that are in the tradition that are structured like shanties, but they wouldn't, you know, the author wouldn't technically call them a shanty because they know better, because they actually aren't used to work on ships.
You know, this is like a dumb thing I'm about to say, but in the early days of Saturday Night Live, they had this skit about the land shark. You know, the land shark would ring the bell, say Candygram stuff, and then he... land shark is a term in a shanty. I ran into it today in Blow Ye Winds, right? Rick, you know, a land shark is like a guy who kind of recruits you to be on a boat if you don't really know what you're doing, or?
Sure. A land shark or a crimp was someone who would take advantage of sailors. A sailor would have his own culture, his own language, his own everything, get to shore, get paid off for the work that he's done, and be extremely vulnerable and become a victim to any number of people on shore who know that he's, as they say, stepping with the tide, has money that doesn't mean anything necessarily to him. It's like Monopoly money. He's lived for months without the need for currency, and he's easy to take advantage of. And land shark was a term that was used constantly for someone who would take advantage of a sailor who didn't know any better, and often was intoxicated and an easy mark.
All right. So, yeah. So Saturday Night Live did not invent that term. All right. So this is the Jovial Crew. They're lots of fun. They're terrific. You can hear them at lots of festivals and places, but most notably on Monday nights at the Grizz. They're going to go out of this segment with one more song. And then at the end of the show, you're going to hear another song by them. But I think this is going to be Hall on the Bowline.
All on the bowling so early in the morning.
All on the bowling, the bowling.
All on the bowling, another day is dawning.
All on the bowling, the bowling.
All on the bowling, the captain he's a calling.
All on the bowling, the bowling.
All on the bowling, the bosun is a bawling.
All on the bowling, the bowling.
All on the bowling, the seagulls are a squalling.
All on the bowling, the bowling.
All on the bowling, Kitty lives in Liverpool.
All on the bowling, the bowling.
All on the bowling, you cannot tie a bowling.
All on the bowling, the bowling.
So, first of all, it's time to say some thank yous. We've got to say some thank yous. There's plenty of thank yous to say. Gene Amatruda really is consistently the technical producer of this Sea Shanty episode, with some possible assistance here and there from, I don't know, maybe Kat Pastor did something. Lily Tyson is always hovering around in the background. The actual producer of this episode is McCusker, formerly Carolyn McCusker, but we rebranded her just to just one name. So thanks to everybody. And this has been kind of complicated, but really fun and interesting. And so we want to say a little bit more here about the origins of sea shanties, where they really come from. And the answer, I think, is a little bit more complicated than we are often led to believe. And to help us with that is Dr. Maya Angelou-Smith, an associate professor of French at the University of Washington. Welcome to our conversation.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
So this is not a merely academic conversation for you, although it is that, but it's not merely academic. There's a way in which this is in your blood. Say a little bit about, tell us who your grandfather was.
That's correct. So my grandfather, who just turned 96, is the son of a menhaden fisherman in the Northern Neck region of Virginia. And he was also an educator, my grandfather was. And so he joined a group called the Northern Neck Shanty Singers in the mid-2000s. And this group has been around since 1991. And they would go around to schools and community centers, and they would sing shanties from this region and educate people about where they came from and why they're a thing. And so when I was visiting my grandfather back in 2018, he still lives in Virginia, and I live in Seattle, so I don't make it to the East Coast that often. But when I was visiting him working on a family memoir project, and so I was interviewing him, he was telling me about his life as a Northern Neck shanty singer. And so I got really interested in this work.
And we should say that his father, that would be your great-grandfather, I guess, lived even closer to this reality, lived and died closer to this reality. Say a little bit about him, too.
That's correct. So he was a fisherman, and he actually died at sea in 1938 when there was a really bad hurricane that hit the eastern seaboard. And so my grandfather lost his father at the age of 12. And so, of course, that was a very difficult experience. And, you know, my grandfather actually promised his mom that he would not become a fisherman because of what that had done to their family.
Yeah. So one of the things that we talked about when we were first getting ready to do this show was the relationship between sea shanties and other kinds of work songs. And there certainly is a sense that a lot of people have that this is a type of song that comes from Great Britain and the environs of Great Britain. And that's true to up to a point. But there's a part of this that is very typically overlooked, and that is the idea that there's a western side of the Black Atlantic rimmed by southern U.S. ports and the Caribbean, as you've written, that a lot of this comes from a tradition more closely connected to Black work songs, both at sea and on land. Say a little bit more, and then we'll hear an example.
Sure. So first, it's probably good to define Black Atlantic. I mean, I'm assuming many people probably have not heard this term. And it was coined by historian Paul Gilroy from a book he wrote with that title, Black Atlantic, about 30 years ago. So in the early 1990s. And it's basically a way to think about sort of the complex nature of Black identity in this part of the world. So he argued that Black Atlantic culture was not just African or American or Caribbean or British, but it was this complicated mix. And so for the Northern Neck shanty singers being right off of the Chesapeake Bay, they are here in the Atlantic. And many, almost all of the Menhaden fishermen were Black, right? But as you said, this comes from a longer tradition of work songs, sung by enslaved African Americans and working class African Americans after the end of slavery, who would sing these work songs both on land and at sea, right? In order to sort of do their work. You know, this was often backbreaking labor. It was really difficult. Often they had to work in tandem, you know, work together to do difficult work like hauling up heavy loads of fish. So these work songs were all over the United States, all over the Caribbean, often sung among African Americans and African Caribbeans, and have existed, you know, for centuries, basically.
Right. Well, we won't keep people in suspense any longer. Let's hear a little bit of what this sounds like. If we were a video show instead of a radio show, we'd be able to show you a video clip of the Northern Neck Shanty Singers, the group that Maya has been talking about right now, at a demonstration for the Library of Congress. And they brought a net with them to demonstrate how workers would pull in time with the song. So let's hear a little bit of it, and then maybe you and I can talk some more about this. This is called Won't You Help Me to Raise 'Em Boys.
Won't you help me to raise 'em boys? Hey, hey. Won't you help me to raise 'em boys? Hey, hey, honey.
Come on, all right. Come on.
Won't you help me to raise 'em out?
See you when the sun goes down.
Come on, all right. All right, so we're talking to Maya Angela Smith right now, Associate Professor of French at the University of Washington. That was the Northern Neck Shanty Singers. And explain who they are. These are, for the most part, former Menhaden fishermen, right?
That's correct. So almost all of them, except for my grandfather, were former Menhaden fishermen who mainly worked from, I would say, the 1930s, and then some of them as late as the 1980s. But I think their heyday was probably the 30s to the 50s before this sort of work started to become automated. And so back in 1991, this person by the name of William Hudnall organized the Northern Neck Shanty Singers, basically as part of a sort of 4th of July special. So there are other groups of shanty singers across the Eastern Seaboard, particularly in North Carolina. And so the Greater Reedville Association in Virginia wanted to show that we also have this tradition. And so they created this group. There were, I think, about 13 men who were originally with the group, started in 1991. All of them were deacons in their churches. And so they had singing background also in the church, and in addition to what they sang while they were working as fishermen.
Yeah, doing a little bit more reading about this, too. One of the things that seems to have happened is that
some of these songs were developed. Some of the songs were developed for stevedores on the docks, and there was this kind of latent assumption, maybe that was statistically kind of true, that stevedores were black and people who worked out on the sea were white. Now that obviously turns out to not be strictly true at all. But I think maybe I sensed in the reading that I was doing that there was this kind of idea, therefore, that black people had no real role in actual sea shanties. And it's amazing and just fascinating to see how untrue that was and also the role they played in creating a song like that one, which we should say also involved, you know, I think that the first line is a prompt. You need everybody to work together to do the same thing at the same time. It's as true on a boat as it could be anywhere, really. And so I assume that the group thing that's sung together is kind of the hauling part of the song.
That's correct. So this follows the sort of call and response work song tradition, right? So someone will call something and then the response we heard and sort of everyone singing together. And that's when the haul would happen. That's when the really difficult work would happen.
Right. So Maya Angelou Smith, we talked at the beginning about how your great-grandfather died at sea. And so another part of the sea tradition, the sea singing tradition, is the lament we're going to play in just a second. Your grandfather leading the Northern Neck Shanty Singers for the Library of Congress in a song called Remember Me. Say a little bit about this, though. This is a different kind of thing. This isn't about work. This is about who we lost and what needs to not be forgotten.
That's correct. So the song you just played is my grandfather's favorite of the shanties. And the song that you're about to play, Remember Me, is my favorite. Partially because he has a solo in it, and it was the first time that I was really getting to hear him sing. I didn't grow up in Virginia, and so I never got to see him sing in the church, and so it was special to me. But also just the sort of connection that he has, having lost his father at sea. And so I'm just thinking about my family line and how I lost my great-grandfather, never met him. You know, my father never met him. But this song, him singing the song, reminds us that he existed, that he was important, and that he was a part of this cultural history that we are uncovering now.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Dr. Maya Angelou Smith. And let's hear your grandfather, Dr. Elton Smith, lead the Northern Neck Shanty Singers in this song, Remember Me.
Remember me. Remember me, oh Lord, remember me.
So that's the end of our show today. Well, it's almost the end of our show today. We still have the Jovial crew here. They're going to sing one more song.
A song called Lowlands. It's what's known as a hand-over-hand halyard shanty. Shorter sails, smaller sails. It's more like a continuous motion. Packets is the island lass. Lowlands, 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 low.
man howling the main top mast.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Captain hails from Barbados.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Got the name Old Hammer Toes.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Fees as bread as hard as brass.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Bunks as hard as a Balaam's ass.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Monkeys to rest in soldiers' clothes.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Where he got them, God only knows.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Up aloft the yard must go.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Up aloft from down below.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Lowland me boys, up she goes.
Lowlands, 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 low.
Get dressed, me boys, you're sure going close.
Lowlands, lowlands, low.